Thanks for tuning in to A.E. Reads Skiffily, the science fiction podcast that taps into the imagination of readers and listeners everywhere. More specifically, this podcast features science fiction stories with sound effects. Joining me today is my girlfriend Mona.
Hi everyone.
And her sister Sarah.
Hey there.
So today's story is Stuffing by Jerry Oltian. And I picked this story because of the upcoming holiday of Thanksgiving. This story first appeared in the Mammoth Book of Extreme Science Fiction, which was published in 2006, and is one of my favorite science fiction anthologies. Without further ado, let's go ahead and read the story.
When Dennis arrived in the park for their lunch date, he found Cheryl already basking in the sun. She was flat on her back in an open spot between two orange trees, arms and legs stretched wide to intercept the maximum amount of light, and wearing only a pair of dark sunglasses. Her skin was in maximum photosynthesis mode, and it intercepted so much light that she looked like a shadow on the ground, which gave Dennis an idea. He stepped softly around the other sunbathers until he stood at her feet, positioned his toes next to her heels, then leaned forward and stretched out his arms in the same posture as hers, so his shadow fell over her in a nearly perfect outline.
"Hey, you're blocking my lunch,"
she said in a peevish tone, and then she must have opened her eyes.
"Oh, it's you, but you're still blocking my lunch."
"You look rather delectable there. Maybe I'll block it some more from a little closer in."
"You do that and we'll get kicked out of the park. Scares the children, you know."
"You're right."
He stepped aside and stripped off his shorts, then sat down beside her while she scooted over to make room. He looked down the length of the colony, a mile wide, 10 mile long cylinder with three transparent windows running its entire length, trying to judge how much time they had before the afternoon rain reached them. The ring of misty fog that worked its way up the length of the cylinder each day looked at least an hour away. Plenty of time for an unhurried meal, and maybe even time enough to use some of their recently acquired energy in a more private setting later. He lay down on his back and took Cheryl's right hand in his left, careful to make sure hers was on top, although, strictly speaking, his higher body mass made maximum exposure more important for him than her.
"Ah, that feels good,"
he said as his skin pigment kicked into action and began flooding his system with sugar and oxygen.
"I love winter time. I know we're only a couple million miles closer to the sun than other times of year, but I swear I can feel it."
"It's possible."
Dennis wiggled his butt to scratch an itch against the grass.
"It's the source of your sustenance. It wouldn't be surprising if you could sense the quality of it pretty accurately. Like the sense of taste back when people still ate food."
She laughed.
"Yeah, maybe our brains are starting to remap the whole cortical region. Instead of taste, now we're measuring voltage."
"Maybe."
They lay side by side for a while, just enjoying each other's company. They had started taking lunch together a few weeks ago, after meeting by chance in line at a fast flash booth and agreeing that neither of them liked the sudden shift in body chemistry they got from the high-intensity lamps. Cheryl had suggested a more leisurely, natural meal in the park, and they had had so much fun getting to know one another that they had made it a regular date.
"You know, thinking about the solstice, there used to be a big traditional festival this time of year. Back when the space habs were new, my great-grandmother told me about it. They called it Thanksmas. People would buy each other gifts, and they would cook up a huge meal and stuff themselves silly, then exchange all their gifts, and then they would..."
"Buy? What's that?"
"Oh, it's a different kind of exchange that people did when they weren't giving things away. They kept track of who did useful work for other people, and they got some kind of points for it, and then when they wanted something that they couldn't make themselves, they traded points with the guy who made it."
"Oh, that must have been before they had AIs to keep track of stuff like that."
"Yeah, I think so. And before they had nanofabs to do the producing. People actually had to do things they didn't like just to collect these points. But Once a year, they blew all their credit on this big feast and gift-giving thing, so life must not have been that bad, or people wouldn't have given everything away like that.
Or maybe they did it just to take their minds off of how awful it was the rest of the time.
Could be. The point is, people used to look forward to this time of year, at least in part because of the big meal. So there's actually historical precedent for liking the solstice sunlight more than other times of the year.
Oh, I see.
She was quiet for a minute or so. But then she said,
"So, do you want to have a solstice meal? Get some big mirrors and intensify the sunlight in your backyard for an afternoon or something?"
Dennis considered that. The only real advantage to high-intensity sunlight was the speed at which you could recharge your body's energy. And that seemed kind of counter to the spirit of the occasion, at least what Dennis remembered from his great-grandmother's stories about it.
No, if we're going to observe Thanksmas, we ought to take our time and savor it the way they used to.
Cheryl rose up on one elbow to look at him.
What do you mean? Actually sticking food in our mouths? And swallowing it?
Huh? Ew! No! I didn't mean that!
Then he realized the tone of voice she had used.
I mean, did you mean that?
No!
She lay back down, but a second later she was back up on her elbow again.
Okay, maybe I did. It sounds kind of sensual.
Then, by all means, let's do it.
He rose up for a kiss and ran his tongue along her lips, enjoying their delicious, womanly flavor. Would food taste anything like that? He had no idea.
We'll need to check with a doctor to make sure our bodies can still handle it, and we'll need to invite some friends. The whole point of Thanksmas was to share it with as many people as you could.
Of course. What good's an intensely personal experience without friends there to watch you make a fool of yourself?
Exactly.
He lay back on the grass again.
So who should we invite?
They settled on two friends each, for a total of six at the party. Since things could get kind of embarrassing while they relearned how to do what people hadn't done for over a century, they decided to invite couples who would at least presumably have developed some tolerance for each other's foibles. Dennis knew immediately who he would invite. His childhood friend Joachim, and his wife, Telium. Joachim had always been an adventurous sort, climbing trees and running around the rain ring and hang gliding from the zero-gravity middle of the colony down to the high-G surface. He had even eaten a bug once on a dare and claimed it hadn't been all that bad. So he already had some experience. Telium was a bit more conservative, but she had a good sense of humor about Joachim's peculiarities, so Dennis was willing to bet she would be okay at a food feast. She accepted the invitation, at any rate, which was better than the first two sets of friends that Cheryl tried. Cheryl eventually talked her sister, Frida, and her sister's partner, Eilet, into joining them. Both women were skeptical, but Frida wanted to meet this new man her sister had been spending time with, and Eilet decided she could use the experience for her master's thesis on the evolution of fads in post-colonial societies.
Oh, great,
Dennis said when Cheryl told him about that.
Now it's going to be documented. No pressure.
Cheryl gave him a puzzled look.
What's to feel pressured about? We get some food, we eat it. How hard is that?
Dennis laughed.
You haven't heard my great-grandmother's stories. Food doesn't come ready to eat. You have to cook it. People used to work for days preparing the Thanksmas meal. It had to be a work of art. And everything had to be ready at exactly the same time. Except for the pie, which you cooked while you were eating the other food.
Why?
So it was still hot when you got to it. Pie came last.
Why?
How would I know?
He vowed to learn by party time. He had 2 weeks, but the days evaporated surprisingly quickly once he had a deadline to meet. First off, he had to find out if people could still eat an entire meal without damaging themselves. So, he looked up a doctor and told him what he planned to do. When the doctor finished laughing, he said,
Sure, it's still possible. We haven't had time to actually evolve away from our ancestral energy source. On the other hand, I'd advise you to reprogram your nanites to assist with the digestive process. Just in case your endocrine glands are slow to respond, after a lifetime of disuse. I can give you a program for that. You'll probably want to upload it a few hours before you eat, so your body will already be prepared for the influx of food.
Dennis felt a big weight slide off his shoulders, until the doctor added,
"Let me know how it works."
That wouldn't be possible without food, which wasn't something a person could just find in a storehouse somewhere. Dennis had to convince his apartment complex's nanofab AI that he had a legitimate need for the stuff, and once it agreed to make what he wanted, he had to decide what he did, in fact, want to make. There had to be a turkey, of course. He had a hard time convincing the AI that he wanted it already dead, and preferably without feathers or entrails, but from his research into cooking techniques, he learned that very few people started with the whole turkey, and he saw no reason why he should either. Tradition was tradition, after all, and he wanted to do his Thanksmas dinner the same way his great-grandmother had done. That also meant potatoes, which he would boil and mash until they were smooth, never lumpy, and gravy made with the molten fat from the turkey, and yams with both caramelized sugar and spun sugar melted over them. Cooking seemed to involve a lot of melting, and deviled eggs, which involved yet another argument with the AI, who couldn't decide whether or not it needed to make a chicken first before it could make an egg. And then there was the stuffing. Cheryl had gotten into the planning by this point, and she had uncovered perhaps the most controversial aspect of the whole holiday meal: what to put inside the turkey carcass while you cooked it. One source said it should be a mixture of spiced breadcrumbs, and another source said it should be crackers and the cut-up giblets and more eggs, mixed in raw rather than deviled, thank goodness. And another source called for a different type of bread made from ground corn, while another swore that the best thing to put inside the turkey was a can of beer that would boil and steam the meat into perfect flavored tenderness from the inside out. Of course, all the sources dismissed the other methods as hopelessly inferior, and Dennis couldn't remember which kind his great-grandmother had liked.
"This must have been why the tradition died,"
he said to Cheryl when she showed him the results of her research.
"Nobody could settle on what kind of stuffing to use."
"I think we should just go with the easiest one. We're already making bread for the crescent rolls, so let's use breadcrumbs and be done with it."
That made a great deal of sense, and the nanofab AI would undoubtedly like the idea too, so that's what they decided to do. Then they complicated its job anyway by ordering olives and cranberry sauce and cheese spread and pickled cucumbers and a half dozen other condiments that the history text swore were necessary for a traditional Thanksmas meal.
"Whoa, check this out."
Cheryl pointed to a footnote at the end of the list.
"It says here that fruitcake was mostly a Christmas thing, and that Thanksgiving and Christmas were two separate holidays until the end of the 20th century, when people realized that preparing for two big feasts in a row was driving them all crazy."
No surprise there.
Even with a nanofab to make the raw ingredients for him, this was turning into a major undertaking. The thought of doing it twice made him seriously doubt the sanity of his own sainted great-grandmother. But as she had so often said to him before she left for a new life on Neptune's moon Triton, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So Dennis persevered, and he and Cheryl finalized their menu and planned their strategy for preparing it all. Then he had to figure out gifts for everyone. In a society where nanofabs could build anything a person wanted from its constituent atoms, it was hard to think of anything that his guests would want that they didn't already have. But Dennis delved into the history text for that, too, coming up with a BB gun for Joaquim, some frilly underwear for Tilium, a bar of soap on a rope for Frida, and a box of real paper stationery for Ailette. For Cheryl, he directed the nanofabs to create a pair of silver earrings with 1-carat diamonds carved into the shape of little hearts. He nearly sent them back for recycling when the nanofab delivered 2 perfectly rendered human hearts, complete with aorta and pulmonary veins. but the reflections of light from them were so incredible that he decided to give them to her after all. At last, the day arrived. Dennis uploaded the modified metabolism program into his body's nanites and reminded his guests to do the same. Then he and Cheryl swung into action, starting with the turkey, which they washed and stuffed and buttered and put in their specially created roaster in their specially created oven, covering it with a tent of aluminum foil despite several sources' admonition that that was cheating. That may have been true, but it was also true that the turkey's skin wouldn't dry out that way, and that's why practically everybody from the 20th century all the way to the death of the whole concept of eating did it. The smell of the raw bird and the dry bread inside it wasn't necessarily appealing, nor was its texture. But once it began to cook, they were amazed at the aroma that wafted out of the oven. Dennis's abdomen gurgled loudly, and Cheryl laughingly accused him of doing it as a joke until her own did the same thing a few minutes later.
It must be the nanites getting our bodies ready.
They peeled the potatoes while the turkey cooked, arguing over whether to use a knife or the special slotted potato peeler that came with the kitchen utensil kit. And then they set the potatoes aside while they boiled the yams and the eggs in separate pots, then candied the yams and deviled the eggs. Hour after hour they cooked the meal, and the smells permeating the apartment grew more and more complex all the while. Dennis's stomach was growling like a wild animal now, and there was a peculiar knotted sensation in it that became more and more insistent until he could finally stand it no longer. When Cheryl poured a can of olives out into a serving dish, he snatched one up, popped it into his mouth, bit down on it 3 or 4 times, sending a wild mix of salty, bitter, acidic, and fruity flavors over his tongue with each bite, then swallowed the pieces. He felt them slide all the way down his throat, and when they hit bottom, he knew he had done the right thing. Cheryl stood there, her mouth wide open, waiting to see if he would fall over. He reached for another olive to feed his ravenous stomach, but at the last moment he popped it in Cheryl's mouth instead. He watched her roll it around with her tongue, then bite down on it, her eyes growing wider all the while. Then she swallowed, and he could actually see the lump pass down her throat.
Oh my God. Why did they ever give this up?
Dennis shook his head.
I have no idea.
They both looked at the dish of olives, then banged their knuckles together in their haste to grab another and another and another. Each one was as delightful as the first, assuaging one tiny step at a time the immense, burning, ravenous hunger in their stomachs.
Stop!
Cheryl said when the olives were half gone, pulling the dish away from Dennis's reach.
We've got to save some for our guests.
She was breathing hard, her nostrils flaring wide with each inhalation. And at that moment, Dennis would have devoured her if there hadn't been a whole room full of food waiting to be prepared and 4 friends coming over to share it. He forced himself to calm down and roll out the dough for the rolls, which was probably why they were called rolls, he supposed. His stomach growled again at the yeasty aroma of the raw bread, but he pushed his fist against his belly until it stopped.
It's taking all my willpower just to resist this stuff. And I'm a grown man who's never seen any of it before. How could children back then live with the anticipation?
Cheryl was concentrating on the pie crust. A smear of white flour dusted the dark photosynthetic skin just above her navel, and Dennis couldn't resist the urge to lean down and lick it off.
Hey!
She squealed, backing away and slapping him playfully on the head.
Don't you start that, or we'll never get this meal ready.
He took a deep breath.
Right. Wow. When are those guys gonna get here?
Soon. Why don't you start boiling the potatoes?
Okay.
Each task required more and more focus, but he forced himself to follow the checklist until suddenly, there came a banging at the front door.
That's gotta be Joachim and Tilium.
Dennis fled the makeshift kitchen to let his friends in. It was indeed Joachim and Tilium, panting heavily as if they had run the whole way from their apartment on the other side of the park. Joachim had leaves in his hair, and they both had orange stains around their mouths. Dennis had been prepared to apologize for his own appearance, but the moment he saw them, he said,
"What happened to you?"
"Our stomachs.
We've been getting these cravings. When we got to the park and smelled the fruit on the orange trees,
You ate one?"
"More than one. You wouldn't believe how good they are."
"Just the inside part."
Then Tilium caught a whiff of the aroma coming from the apartment, and she pushed past Dennis.
"Oh, wow. Wow, wow. Excuse me, I'm gonna go check on this turkey of yours."
"Oh yeah, let's see this thing,"
Joachim said, hot on her heels.
"Incoming,"
Dennis called out to Cheryl. He would have followed to help her, but he saw Frida and Ailette running out of the park, so he stayed to greet them at the door.
"You'll never believe what we just figured out."
Frida shoved a soft white cylinder about an inch across into his mouth.
"Can you believe it? It's a banana."
The flavor was amazing, smooth and sweet and exotic. And oh yeah.
"Who knew they were food? I always thought they were just genetically engineered sex toys."
"What have we been missing all our lives? And more to the point, why?"
"I've been asking that same question all afternoon. Come on in and let's start eating."
He didn't have to offer twice. With six people helping, the rest of the preparation went like a meteor strike. And within minutes, the pies were in the oven, and they were all sitting at the table, drooling at all the food, while Dennis sliced slab after slab of flaky, white meat from the turkey's breast. Only the presence of the knife kept everyone from snatching each piece as soon as it came free. When he had carved six big slices, he held up the knife and said,
"There's a traditional speech that the host makes before the meal."
But he got no further before he was pelted with olives and pickles from all sides. So he lowered the knife and said,
"Dealer, we thank you for this bounty placed here before us, amen. Okay, let's eat."
They didn't bother learning how to use forks and spoons, nor plates either for the first few minutes. They just grabbed what they could reach and stuffed it in their mouths. Nobody spoke. They just grunted and pointed and handed food back and forth until their stomachs stopped craving more. Then they loaded up their plates and ate simply because it tasted so wonderful. And then they ate some more because they didn't want to stop. Finally, when the turkey was picked to the bone and every scrap of every other dish was gone as well, they pushed back from the table and staggered, groaning, into the living room, where they could stretch out on the couches and let their meals digest.
"I expected more energy out of it."
Joachim rubbed his distended belly.
"Me too,"
Frida said.
"I feel like I just ran the length of the colony."
"I thought it was just me because I spent all day preparing it."
"It was all that eating. It really takes it out of you to shovel all that stuff into you."
Cheryl's eyes were closed and her breathing was slowing down. Dennis wanted nothing more than to close his own eyes and drift off for a long afternoon nap. But the suddenness of their torpor alarmed him enough that he forced himself to stand up and go into his study, where he searched the historical archives for symptoms of overeating. He found several articles on weight gain and dieting, which he bookmarked just in case, but he found what he was looking for in an article on metabolism. Tryptophan, it said, was an essential amino acid formed from proteins during the digestive process, and it also had a pronounced soporific effect. Nothing to worry about as long as you didn't try to operate heavy machinery after eating a big meal. He went back into the living room to tell everyone, but they were already asleep. So he snuggled in next to Cheryl and did the same. They awoke several hours later and exchanged their gifts, oohing and awing over each of them, even the lame ones. Cheryl loved her earrings, and Joachim happily fired BBs at the turkey carcass until one of them bounced back and hit him in the eye. Cheryl gave Dennis a pair of warm socks.
because I notice that your feet sometimes get cold in the middle of the night.
Then it was time for pie. They weren't quite as excited about it as they were the rest of the meal, but the first bite changed that. They wound up dividing the whole thing into 6 pieces and cleaning the plate. When they were done, they sat at the table and looked at the wreck of Dennis's apartment. The room they had cooked everything in was piled with dirty pots and pans, and the dining table was covered with dirty dishes and the platter with the turkey carcass on it, and the living room floor was scattered with the paper they had concealed the presents with until they had exchanged them, and even the guests were covered with smudges of grease and egg yolk and gravy.
We are gloriously stuffed, and I loved every minute of it. I still can't figure out why people gave this up.
Cheryl had an odd expression on her face. She looked down at her lap, then twisted around to look at her butt.
What's the matter?
Something feels funny down there.
Funny how?
Funny, like really full, like something wants to come out?
Now that she mentioned it, Dennis had been feeling the same thing for a while himself. He hadn't paid much attention since his stomach felt so much more distended, but the focus of the pressure was definitely moving lower. He felt a little bubble of gas escape, and the pressure eased a bit, but then the smell rose up to nose level, and everyone scattered, gagging and waving their hands in front of their noses.
I think we just figured out why people quit doing this.
Cheryl opened the window. But it wasn't for another half hour, when they could no longer hold back the pressure, that they knew for sure.
And that's the story. So, as we sometimes do, we like to discuss the story. And since Mona and Sarah are drinking alcohol, I feel like they're primed to have a discussion. So, would you guys give up food?
I would not.
Mona's shaking her head, which we can all hear. What about you, Sarah? Would you give up
food? I would. I definitely would.
If you didn't have to poop?
No, not that. I think it's just laborsome having to eat 3 meals a day. And I don't particularly enjoy having extravagant food, so I would give it up for sure.
Bodybuilders eat 5 times a day.
Also do women who have gestational diabetes.
That's
quick fact.
fun fact. I don't know. I feel like I would like to be able to not have to eat, but maybe like a sometimes thing sort of thing. Like it's special. Like if it's just for nutrition, you know, it would be nice to not have those cravings. Because like these people don't ever have to worry about weight or making sure that they have all the proper nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
They get everything from sunlight. They make their vitamin D. And although we currently humans can't make vitamin C from sunlight, you could easily, because there's just some genes that have been shut off. You could just like turn that back on. We could eliminate scurvy. It would be nice to basically have guaranteed nutritional sustainability.
I think for developing countries or for malnourished populations, it would make a lot of sense. And if I could temporarily turn off my need to eat if my options were not appetizing or not nutritionally sound or very expensive, that might be an option. But I think if it was all eating or no eating at all, I would stick with all eating.
Mm.
There's a lot of routines and parts about eating a meal that are enjoyable beyond just the food that I think people would miss out on.
So do you guys eat 3 meals a day or more or 5 or whatever? Because you're bodybuilders, obviously.
I eat usually 3 meals a day.
I tend to eat 3 meals a day, although when I work, I kind of snack a little bit more. So
you have meals and snacks, though.
Yeah, I guess that's a better, because I've done the 5 meals a day thing. It actually helped me lose weight a little bit without a whole lot of exercise, because it raises your basal metabolism.
I'm the type of person, I can eat one meal a day and I'm fine with it, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be, it can be a piece of bread, some cheese, I'm that's good. So I don't know, I just don't have the appetite or whatever to eat. Thanksgiving or Christmas or nice gatherings with everyone. And I can appreciate it. But on the daily, it's if I didn't have to eat, I think my day would be better, I think.
I wonder if your sense of taste has an effect on that. If you're a super taster.
Maybe.
Where food is this artistic experience for you. As opposed to if you are the opposite, an under taster, term? Had some really spicy food, and you killed your taste buds. So for 10 days.
I don't think that I have a very especially refined palate, but I definitely enjoy good food.
I do too, and like I can taste like all the seasonings and spices and can appreciate it, but I just don't feel like I have that hunger. So I'm not going to eat for pleasure, I'm going to eat because I'm hungry. And so I wait till I'm hungry, and that's usually like 7 p.m.
I wonder if this is something where it kind of has to be all or nothing. I get the sense that like there's the nanates that they have to help prepare for it. It might just kind of be the case that people at some point made that decision, and then a generation was raised where people didn't know the pleasure of food, and so in a sense didn't know what they were missing. And that probably helped with society because they don't have to worry about toilets.
Yeah, where did they poop at the end?
They don't drink either, like water, because you'd have to pee still.
Plants photosynthesize and they need water, but they don't urinate.
Yeah.
Maybe. Male and female urinals?
Maybe they just popped a squat in the park.
Okay. Would they even have to squat if they're just peeing?
Maybe. I don't know the mechanics of this. Men don't, but
it's quite messy if you don't squat.
They have
you have that funnel thing.
I
was like gonna say they have apparatuses for women.
Yeah, there's actually a way you can
No, there's not. That's not how that's no female it's
totally,
anatomy
to you can totally anatomy. There's a way to nope. pinch your labia.
No. Nope.
I read this on the internet. It's just the right way. Just, I don't know that I couldn't teach you how to do it. I just read this. Mona and I met on OkCupid, and her profile said that she likes to bake, and that it was very important that who she dates also likes to eat what she bakes. That's something that's like an important condition of our relationship. But actually, that's a really good point about when you mentioned the developing world. That relates to this being like a post-scarcity society. There's been stories that I've read where somebody invents something similar to this. Like there's a story called Hair by Adam Roberts where humans are able to photosynthesize from implanted hair. In that story, that sort of rebalances the class dynamic because then you have these people who don't need to work to survive. All they need to do is just sit in the sun, and they've got everything they absolutely need, and everything else is just sort of optional. Kim Stanley Robinson has a very similar story called Oral Argument. It's tattoos instead of hairs, but it's the same thing. I guess the jury's out on whether people in general would completely abandon food. I feel like science fiction does that. Go, oh, there's this development, and everybody will do this. There was a Robin Williams movie. Everybody's got some sort of device in their brain that records everything. And his job is to, like, create a nice little montage video at the funeral. I think it was, like, Final Cut or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it was, like, everybody had it. And there was just, like, weird religious zealots who opposed it. But it was still, like, just universally accepted. And that's probably where this guy went too far.
And if the society made a shift from the character's great-grandmother eating food to now her great-grandson not eating any food, that sounds quite abrupt.
Yeah. Although this is a smaller society, because the space hab.
It's a warm colony of people.
All right. Well, that was a good discussion. So that's the end of the show. Thank you, Mona and Sarah, for helping me read this story. You can find me on Instagram at AEUSOES1, AEUSOES1, where you can drop me some comments. Mona also has an Instagram at SewAgainstTheGrain, and you can also find SewAgainstTheGrain on Etsy, where Mona makes custom science fiction dresses, along with other dresses. So let us know what you think of the show, and if you have any ideas for the show, feel free to DM me. And also, please help out the podcast by leaving very positive reviews on iTunes or Google Play and or Podomatic and or Stitcher or wherever it is that you subscribe to podcasts. And then that will let other people know about A.E. Reed Skiffily. And then you can help people find this great science fiction literature podcast that I know you love. Thank you all for listening, and be sure to tune in next time for episode 13.